With the 10th pick in the 2025 MLB draft, the Chicago White Sox select Billy Carlson, a shortstop from Corona High School in Corona, California.
From your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Robin. Welcome to the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Sunday night, July 13th, 2025, as we record this episode. As you just heard Rob Manfred announce, the Chicago White Sox have added three more players to their prospect pipeline with prep players Billy Carlson and Jaden Foskey, and in the third round, Kyle Lodice from Georgia Tech. On Monday, the White Sox will finish their MLB draft with the rounds 4 through 20. So how do we like the new additions? We'll discuss later in the show. And it's also the All-Star break. And while the White Sox only have Shane Smith attending and not sure if he's even pitching, we'll make our home run derby picks to click. But first, the White Sox finished the pre-All-Star break schedule, losing 3 out of 4 to Cleveland, which is unfortunate as members of the 2005 White Sox returned to Chicago to celebrate Mark Burley getting a statue and remembering their teammate, Bobby Jenks. Joining me is Sox Machine's managing editor, Jim Margulis. And Jim, the White Sox losing 3 out of 4 to the Guardians. And I don't know what to make of the Guardians after watching this series. They win a one-run game in extra innings. They lose a one-run game in extra innings. I don't know how to gauge what they should do moving forward. But from a White Sox perspective, I think the highlight is the reunion and seeing so many of the 2005 White Sox players come back, not only to celebrate their world championship, but Mark Burley getting his statue and remembering their teammate Bobby Jenks. What was your reaction from afar taking in the reunion weekend?
It was cool. I've been resistant to 2005 nostalgia over the years because it's been really the only thing the franchise has accomplished. And you get a little bit of 1985 Bears apprehensions about, like, how long are they going to keep milking this? You know, do something else, win a postseason series. You know, just every time they pointed to it as a reason why this right fielder could work for 1 year and $2 million, or, you know, just talking about energy and chemistry versus in leadership versus like actual talented players. It always made me think, like, just keep pointing back to 2005. That was, you know, 10 years ago, that was 15 years ago, that was 18, you know, just every time, every passing year, it just became sadder to point to it. So yeah, you get a little bit tired of going to that well for good vibes and such. But having said all that, having seen all the players back, aside from a couple exceptions, Bobby Jenks, Aaron Rowan, who, you know, wanted to be there. Frank Thomas wasn't there, which was, you know, a little bit odd, even though he wasn't like a central figure in that. You know, Kenny Williams not there, kind of understandable given how raw the feelings might be. Same thing with Rick Hahn, you know, for just, you know, how, you know, there isn't much distance from his last flop to being here now. But like, otherwise the whole gang was together, and it's cool that like they seem to hold it in a similar regard. Like, you know, they're on a pedestal in one respect, I think, in terms of being the only White Sox team to do this that anybody remembers. On the other hand, it seems like based on what everybody was saying, based on how they're conducting themselves, talking to the media, talking to fans, the availabilities, et cetera, it seems like they don't hold themselves on a pedestal, or they've pulled fans up on the pedestal being like, we're the only ones who appreciate this. Like, we're the only ones who remember that we did this. We're the only ones who were, you know, that affected by what we accomplished. And yeah, even Konerko sounded like, it's odd to hear Paul Konerko talk about like, man, it's weird that ESPN keeps forgetting we exist. And sure enough, like they said, Chris Burke won a 2005 World Series with the Houston Astros during the draft. So it's like, they managed to find ways to blow it. They said Bobby Jenks was on the roster for the 2005 World Series team when they were, you know, delivering his obituary online, when it's like, yeah, he recorded the final out, thank you. But just like, you know, it seems like the national media pays the bare minimum attention to it. So I think they're happy to be among each other that remembers what it was like to do that. And fans too, just, you know, the fans who met up with them said like, yeah, they were really friendly and had great conversations. And, so I think everybody is there to celebrate, and, probably the obscurity of the accomplishment or how odd it is that it hasn't resonated nationally but just how strongly it was appreciated locally seems to bring everybody together. And I think the coolest thing for me, from being a viewer of it, was the innings that they would drop out of the Schriffen and Stone broadcast to just have Chuck and Ozzy and AJ Pierzynski is my favorite, but even Konerko in the booth too, just shooting the bull about memories, about players, about kind of doing free association with what came to mind when somebody brought this up, or they'd have a brief reference to the on-field action, then they go back to making fun of each other, and you're hearing AJ rip on Ozzy and vice versa. And it felt very much like the inside the NBA of a White Sox broadcast of, here are guys that just know each other for years, just ripping on each other. And you're listening to friends talk and they know enough about baseball to be enlightening, but you're not there for like the nuts and bolts stuff. You're there for the, the camaraderie and the chemistry and the actual analysis of the game kind of takes a backseat to that. And that was fun that the producers let it fly. Like AJ was talking in the middle of an anecdote during a pitching change and they didn't go to commercial. They just kept rolling. They didn't tell AJ to stop it or we'll can pick it up back after the break. They just kept rolling. They bypassed the commercial break to just let AJ talk. And so I think everybody, broadcast wise, event wise, the on-field toast was cool. Just did a good job of like letting the mood dictate how things were going. And just, it was nice respite, I think, for White Sox fans, just having this to look back on, but also just having the whole team showing up. It wasn't like, here are five players who accomplished the only thing White Sox fans care about. It was everybody gathering. And I think that's what made it more than just a slapdash knockoff 15-year reunion where just like, please remember we did something. Everybody seemed to be on the same page.
Yeah, as a fan, getting a chance to take photos with some of the players, we are season ticket holders in our household. So my wife, Kim, and I were able to get photos with Scott Pesednik and Mark Burley. So that was really cool. The White Sox doing that and doing meet and greets with the 2005 or members of the 2005 squad. Tadahito Iguchi was just chilling in the patio during the buffet. As far as the pregame meal that people would walk up and get photos with him, I thought that was really cool. So the White Sox did a great job. I mean, you had the Mark Burley statue unveiling, huge lines all weekend for people wanting to see the Mark Burley statue. The replica is really cool. The bobblehead of the four straight complete games, the ALCS, that bobblehead is awesome. So the White Sox crushed it from a marketing perspective as far as engaging with the fans and bringing back members of that 2005 squad. I thought it was great as well, Jim. I wish there were more fans at the stadium during the special ceremony before Saturday's game. The crowd was pretty sparse for it, and that part was disappointing. But everything else, though, I thought was great for the White Sox and bringing back the 2005 squad. We'll see if they do it again in 5 years. I mean, I guess they could do that every 5 years, bring everybody back. If they need marketing, they need butts in the seats. There you go. Every 5 years.
Yeah. That's where it gets a little bit like, going back again. But yeah, I think having some distance, then everybody talked about just hadn't talked to this guy in years and you pick up where he left off. And I think that's what made it cool. And I even saw comments about like, I wasn't able to get in this autograph line, but I talked to this player and he was really happy just to be talking to people. And that's, I think, what, makes it special and having all the players together to both appreciate it as a unit, but also probably defray attention to where everybody gets, like, if you have five players show up and then like thousands of fans show up to talk to those five players or have photos with those five players, it probably feels very much like an autograph convention or like some kind of memorabilia convention where just like, just handshake, photo, move on, et cetera. Just, you know, basically, you know, fulfilling obligations. Whereas this, I think when you have, you know, 25 players showing up and just being able, like, yeah, I saw Dustin Hermanson. I saw just, you know, going, you know, the various players you bump into just based on the sheer volume and being able to have all of those more spontaneous interactions, I think is what made it stand out to a lot of people.
And pulling the curtain back as far as the production of this podcast, Sox Machine's beat reporter James Fegan joining us after the Zoom calls with the Chicago White Sox covering the MLB draft, which we'll talk about in a moment. But James, you were at the stadium. Your Bobby Jenks piece was phenomenal, sir. It was an honor reading that. So fantastic job in getting the anecdotes and getting the Bobby Jenks' teammates talk about how special he was and how much he meant to not only to the 2005 squad, but to them personally. So fantastic job on that piece. But for you covering this reunion weekend, what were some of the highlights that you got to experience, James?
My wife can see me blushing. It's strange because, like, for a lot of Chicago media, it's kind of a reunion with people they covered, especially more experienced people. And I don't really have, like, that interaction with them. I have, like, Toby Hall talking about Bobby Jenks, obviously not, you know, a member of the 2005 White Sox, but he's there representing him at Bobby's request. And that was very emotional interview, maybe one of the more intense of my career that I've witnessed. So that was not a highlight, but, you know, something that was very raw and will stick with me.
Resonated.
Yeah. I would have loved covering Canerco. His answers on everything are amazing, even when we don't want him to. Like, he was 20 minutes into his scrum and he got asked some questions, like, basically, would you consider ever getting into coaching? And it was like a 4-minute answer that could be boiled down to no. But he had to spell out, like, why and what his process to getting that point would be. And, like, basically his, like, dismissing the idea of the general canard of, hey, just make the smart player coach, and him saying, like, there's so much that goes into it. Like, me coming, like, lazily and just telling people to do what I do would be, like, disrespectful to, like, what goes into it. It's just, like, a very, he will both acknowledge that he has, like, things he's old and grouchy about, and then explain, like, why it's incumbent upon him to not give it an old and grouchiness. And that while he has this feeling, like, he doesn't actually think it's, like, valid in a way where he's going to propagate it like he's right. Like, he knows he doesn't really actually like bat flips and, like, people dance around the bases. Like, we all watch Paul Konerko's career. That's clearly not his style. But at the same time, you'll then lay out the entire case of, like, why his opinion on that doesn't really matter. And, like, isn't something that, like, should be championed. Like, Paul Konerko said this. It's like, who cares? Like, I'm 50 or pushing, getting close to that. And, like, I'm not involved in the sport anymore. Like, what am I, like, like, what do you think of the game today? It's like, I see stuff that doesn't make sense all the time. Like, but I don't know. I'm an old guy. And I'm
so he shouldn't be allowed to represent himself in court.
If it comes to that, probably not. First of all, like, the judge would probably get cranky at the size of the digression. but because of that, like, it was all the more gratifying to, like, basically, I've been dropping the, like, Bobby Jenks was ahead of his time theory with a lot of people over the course of that weekend, because that was, like, my main idea, and having a lot of people be like, yeah, I mean, he threw hard, and it's like, yeah, but more than that, and having Konerko kind of, like, really co-sign it, be like, yeah, he's totally, like, you took his style pitching the way he looked, like, you could drop him to the game 20 years later in the way you couldn't for me, and he'd look like he fit, like, the version of me is bigger, stronger, faster now. Like, you don't see slow first baseman as much anymore, even though slow first baseman are faster than I was. Like, he has, like, this whole, he builds out this whole world of, like, what would you look like if you build up, like, tried to take players from 20 years ago and put them in the game now. To, like, it's longer than it probably needs to be, but it's like damn, like, I need to go, but this is so interesting, is, like, what all Canerco's answers are. So basically him agreeing with me, a career highlight.
That's awesome.
Has he ever said that's a dumb question?
No, and he certainly had opportunity to.
Well, again, if you didn't get a chance, go to, I know there's a lot of draft coverage and there's a lot of news that we have on the website right now. But definitely read James's piece, Remembering Bobby Jenks. Fantastic. Amazing quotes from Konerko, Burley, Brzezinski, Toby Hall. Just a fantastic piece. I think it's the best feature that we have done on SoxMachine.com so far this year, and it's going to be hard to beat. So if you didn't get a chance, go to SoxMachine.com and read James's piece. A Sox Machine public service announcement. We have brand new items in the Sox Machine store. With the weather heating up, we've got new Adidas Sox Machine polos, perfect for your company outings, casual Fridays, and of course, the golf course. It's part of our media attire as well when covering events. You can grab any of these three styles that we now have in the store. We've got new Sox Machine coffee mugs to sip from while you read Jim and James in the morning, new stainless steel water bottles with the Sox Machine logo, and fanny packs, which fanny packs have been very helpful entering Major League Baseball stadiums with all the bag restrictions. Visit shop.soxmachine.com to check out the new gear. And for Sox Machine subscribers, remember your discount code to get an additional discount when checking out. Again, the URL is shop.soxmachine.com. Easy to beat this White Sox offense. One, I just want to thank you guys, if any of the White Sox
Great segue.
players that are listening to this, you're going to win me a steak dinner. Because right now, this offense is on pace to score 554 runs. Now, again, the over-under is 555 and a half runs. So we're pretty close right now. But the trade deadline's coming up. Talkman's going to get dealt. Austin Slater might get dealt if a team wants to add a bench bat to face left-handed pitching. John Heyman in the New York Post wrote on Sunday that Luis Robert has serious suitors, and he listed off eight teams, which I'll wait to see if that does come to fruition. But Jim, you and I over the years have talked about RBIs, and we are a big fan of advanced metrics, but we both have a soft spot for RBIs. The RBI leader heading to the All-Star break is a three-way tie between Andrew Benintendi, Luis Robert Jr., and Miguel Vargas with 35. Cal Raleigh of the Seattle Mariners has 38 home runs. Cal Raleigh has more home runs than the RBI leader of the Chicago White Sox at the All-Star break. That is insane to me. And shout out to our friends from the 108, because in their last podcast episode, they brought up how bad Chase Mydroth and Miguel Vargas have been. Josh Rojas, in the last 30 games for the White Sox, has a higher OPS than Mydroth and Vargas. And host All-Star break, looking ahead, Jim, this is where I'm concerned. Because again, for the betting folks, the over-under for wins this year was 49 and a half. And the White Sox are currently at 32, so they got to win 18 more games for the rest of the season. That might be tough if they do not hit the ball better. And I'm at a loss for words right now. This is the part of this franchise that gives me great concern that I don't know how this gets better.
Yeah, it's difficult right now. You can see like why, there was hope, or like why the offense was starting to have a little bit of momentum when Mydroth was a top of the order guy, when Vargas was a middle of the order guy. Maybe they were miscast as like a second hitter and a cleanup hitter, but you could see them like the Vargas of May hitting fifth or sixth for a good team on a given day. You could see Mydroth like being you probably best as like a nine hitter, but like a second table setter, being somebody who gets on base for the leadoff guy, and if he provides the extra base hit, so much the better, and being a valuable member of the team. But yeah, when Mydroth has basically he's good for two extra base hits a month, the last 2 months, and hit a double on Sunday, but it was just like right down the line, or like just a well-placed, muscled roller down the line, and just like that's what constitutes an extra base hit for him these days. Vargas seems like he's catching everything off the end of the bat again. Like the swing doesn't look bad, the swing decisions doesn't look bad. Like the launch angle doesn't look bad. And if you're half watching it or you just pay attention to the ball flight, you think like, oh, maybe it's going to get over the outfielder's head. But then you just see like before it cuts to the center field cam or the behind home plate cam looking out to the outfield, you see like the briefest bit of shoulder slump from Vargas running in the box, like, nope, he didn't get it. And then you see the outfielder in his tracks, more or less, catching the ball without an issue. And it's similar to what we saw last year from him in that the swing doesn't look bad. And it seems like just all it takes is one adjustment to get him going again. But just the, whether it's because the bat isn't on time or he's just, not tracking the pitches correctly, or if they're just pitching him away, 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 and he just has to give in too much to those pitches on the the shadow of the outside edge, and that's why he's catching off the end of the bat. It's all the same. So yeah, missing those two guys at their above average forms, then what are you left with? Like Lenin Sosa when he's on a heater, and Mike Talkman, who's been pretty, the power is eased up a little bit, but still he's getting on base. The at bats are quality, like Austin Slater getting into one. Like you're having these isolated moments of excellence, like Edgar Caro. But then if you need Edgar Caro to run 270 feet after he gets on base, going station to station, or like run on singles, like that's a hard way to score a run. So it's some guys are getting on base, but then when you're looking for like the easy way to score them, it's really not happening.
Yeah, James, have you heard anything from the White Sox clubhouse, in particular the struggles with Vargas and Mydrot? Is this another hand issue with Vargas that he's not being consistent with his hand placement? Is Mydrot just hitting a lull in his rookie year with the White Sox? What are you hearing about the White Sox offensive troubles from the clubhouse?
Vargas feels he's chasing a little much. And definitely like his fastball like rate is like what he's seen has gone down, I think, as a result, and trying to like adjust to the breaking balls he's seen. I think you're seeing him get beaten by some more often too, of recent. When I asked Venable about Mydroth most recently, he kind of alluded to like fatigue, or he was certainly banged up early portions of the year, and seeing that wearing him a little bit. I thought he struck the ball pretty well today. I mean, Mydroth kind of comes down with the, if his contact is, like a normal launch for regular play with power, it's actually not very useful, and you need him like in this very like precise low line drive bucket. So that makes things complicated. He has to be super high contact. But I think there's been a lot of like allusion to like, well, he's kind of figuring out the full season grind at this moment, which tends to imply fatigue, or the fact that he was dealing like with three different things at one point, maybe catch up to him a little bit. But one thing that I try to like would indicate optimism at is that you have having so many rookies. Yeah, it does seem like trading away Talkman and or Slater would be a big kneecap to this offense at this point. But I think we could see Kyle Teal hit better than he has, as he acclimates to the league. And I think I don't think at any point I've like even with Vargas not getting resolved, even with him like looking bad, like I don't think that we went back to like this guy isn't a major leaguer type of at bats from him at any point. I think we may be seeing a bit of a ceiling because there's really not impact power that like he will fly out to medium depth if he doesn't like absolutely crush it pretty often. And obviously, that's even more of a limitation with Mydroth, and I think they're going to be a bit more up and down as a result of that than maybe their maze would have indicated. But I don't think it's like Mydroth, you're maybe seeing a lot of the ceiling of like how much power you can really produce as currently, but I don't think it's necessarily a they don't belong here regression, and it could be something where we see them get better over the course of the second half. And certainly, everyone's saying the break is well timed, but I imagine every clubhouse across the country is saying that.
Yeah, and hopefully they do hit better as again the White Sox will be in Pittsburgh, which we'll talk about that in a later in the show. Can't wait to see everyone in Pittsburgh next weekend for our annual road trip and Tampa Bay before they close out the month of July at home against the Chicago Cubs and the Philadelphia Phillies, which is a tough homestand. But it'll be fun to attend those games and see teams that are heading into the postseason or going to be in the postseason race right before the trade deadline. But if it feels after the All-Star break, it's a grind to watch this White Sox team, it's because the offense. If it's kind of like pulling fingernails just for them to score 2 to 3 runs a game, it could feel definitely a drag after the All-Star break watching this offense. But this is the biggest need that the White Sox need to improve upon. And we'll talk about how they address that in the MLB draft. But James, like on the eye test, because we don't have a lot of data yet to really make solid judgments on Colson Montgomery and his major league career so far, but he has been playing third base. He's been playing shortstop, and defensively he looks better than expected. And as far as his athleticism, definitely coming into play, stealing some base hits. Are we going to see Montgomery play more third after the All-Star break, or do the White Sox want to give him a longer leash at shortstop?
They want him to be primarily shortstop. I think they bristle at the idea of leash because like they don't think he's coming off of it anytime soon.
Okay.
I do think, speaking of people coming off of it, Will Venable spoke about Lenin Sosa playing first, like somebody who's maybe seen enough for a bit. He did say that Lenin Sosa is better off at second base, which, given that he leads the league in errors at second base, is quite a statement. However, I agree. I think Lenin is better at second base than first base, which is a sad
mission
of failure of my pet project, but he's had kind of some mistakes there that can't not that he hasn't had mistakes. I'm saying maybe the sort of that kind of be like, let's not do this anymore level, not just this is an issue. So with that, then Vargas plays more first, third base is opened up. And if you're pushing, they'd rather play Mydroff than Rojas, I think. And even with Mydroff struggling, I think people could understand why that's a more worthwhile project. And as a result, that would push Colson, because I think you're stretching Chase's arm a little bit, but third, and certainly it doesn't have the power to traditionally play there. I think that rotation could lead to Colson playing a bit more third. And simultaneously, they want Mydroff to still be able to cover short. He is effectively the backup shortstop. They want to keep that competency level for him. I think when he was hot, I still had White Sox people saying, like, this is fun. We like this player. This is a winning player, but we think this is a utility guy long term, a high order utility guy, which is a way to make it sound more complimentary. They want that guy to keep playing shortstop. He'll need it. It'll be part of his career. So I don't think they'd want a situation where Montgomery is playing more third than short. But I think certainly if you're kind of crying uncle a little bit with Lenin, but also acknowledging that Lenin is hitting his way into the lineup, this is in a line, the formation you could see them run out decently often, once a series even.
Jim, do you like Montgomery at third?
He fits the part, like watching him, build wise, arm strength wise. He took that rocket like off his shin or like the inside of his knee. That didn't look great, but so I'm not sure if that was just a 104 mile per hour one hopper that, a lot of infielders would not have their, or would be lucky to get their glove in the right place trying to anticipate the hop, or if that's like just a sign of inexperience there. The literal hot corner, or like the very evocative hot corner. So, perhaps like that's the case, but like in terms of motions, like he looks like he's moving fine. Looks like he can make the throws. We'll see what they have in mind for Billy Carlson. Like if he's up by the end of the season, if they do the Angels thing where all of a sudden he's either September or May, getting playing time, perhaps they have to move Montgomery over, but assuming they just want some variety, like you mentioned with developing players, then it makes sense to develop his skill set as well, just because if they have to make room for infielders they are evaluating to have a better idea of what to do for 2026, makes sense to get all these guys playing time wherever they can get playing time. So build out a skill set.
When I asked Mike Shirley how quickly he thought Billy Carlson would move, he said, "It's up to Billy." I don't think he meant literally it's his decision. I think it's more how well he plays. But maybe.
I mean, that was how Connor Gillespie got in trouble with the Giants. Like, he had like a handshake deal to get like service time. Started as like time on the 40-man roster, got called up, pretended like he was supposed to be there, and the veterans didn't care for it. And then when he got to the White Sox, he had basically like seemed to vomit out of nervousness the entire time, just his rookie season. And it was very funny, like seeing how angsty he was in his interviews and such with the White Sox, and then like seeing this guy who just basically seemed to get his ass handed to him with the Giants by overplaying his hand, getting a pretty sweet deal draft day, and then trying to pretend like he was supposed to be there, didn't go well.
Well, Montgomery defensively looks good. He's impressed me in his early start in the major leagues. Since Colorado offensively, Montgomery is 2-for-18. So hopefully he gets hot again. Offensively, you see a little bit more hits from Colson Montgomery. But defensively, he looks solid at short and at third base
It was
so far.
funny watching the broadcast. They had Colson's dad on. Brooke Fletcher was talking to him during at bat, and Colson's dad was talking about like, man, they're spamming them with changeups right now. That's like their outfit. It's basically breaking down, how he's struggling or like his first obstacle, and saying like he's just getting changeups. Like that's the out pitch for him right now. He has to show that he can hit it. I was like, great, Colson's dad. Thanks for not gassing him up.
Opposite, really.
Yeah.
Gaslighting. My son can't hit a changeup. What are we doing here? Well, you mentioned Billy Carlson, and the Major League Baseball draft started on Sunday. The first three rounds, as Major League Baseball has decided to shrink down the draft. It used to be over 3 days, but now just 2 days, with the rounds 1 through 3 on Sunday. The round, fourth round, all the way through the end of the draft, the 20th round, will be taking place on Monday. It starts at 10:30 in the morning Central Time, and we'll be covering as far as all the picks as they come in for the Chicago White Sox. But in the first round, pick number 10, Billy Carlson, prep shortstop from Corona, California. If you got a chance to join our draft show, Jim and I were providing our live reactions leading up to the White Sox pick and how everything was sorted out. Jim, after the dust has settled, how are you feeling about Billy Carlson being taken in the first round by the White Sox?
Completely different. Hate the pick. No, it's good. Like prep shortstop was the way I was hoping that Getz would go. And he certainly said, I love shortstops, and everything is pointing to it. But there was a very tempting pick with Jamie Arnold still on the board. Classic lefty with a breaking ball, very advanced, can fast track him. They can point to Carlos Rodon and Garrett Crochet, and as if they didn't take like 5 years to get right at the major league level before they are actually their current form, and pretending like they have a special knack for developing lefties, and us ready to just go back to my initial reaction of Hagen Smith last year and then revise it based on how Smith has looked this year and be like, okay, do not be skeptical about it versus encouraged about it. Don't drink the Kool-Aid there. But they bypassed it, and they went for the prep shortstop, who's going to, he's got the defense, so he's not like a project on both sides. He's not like a freak athlete who has played all over the place, and he's going to need some repetitions to get both sides of the ball down. Like he's got a floor, and based on your conversations with Jim Callis and how Carlson was viewed by other teams, being like, hey, just a simple swing change. And they make it sound pretty simple, and this will be a test of, well, can the White Sox actually do that? Can Ryan Fuller and R&D department, get more out of his hit tool without completely sacrificing his power, or vice versa, to where he's a one-note offensive player who leans on his glove to be an everyday player? Like, fascinated by the project. I think if it clicks the way the rankings said that it could. Not just what the White Sox are saying, then yeah, it's very much a player that they need. Both somebody who answers the shortstop question convincingly, but also has athleticism and the ability to hit 15, 20 homers as well if everything goes right in that regard. So yeah, a lot to like in terms of the profile, and also just fascinating for what the White Sox think they can be better at doing.
Yeah, tough day for University of Tennessee. Steele Hall goes ninth overall to Cincinnati. Billy Carlson goes 10th overall. That was Tennessee shortstop recruits. So, shortstop was a tough spot for Tennessee at the end of the year. We'll see what Coach Tony Vitello does at that position for the Volunteers. But, James, you got a chance to be part of Billy Carlson's media scrum and his introduction to the White Sox beat. I've raved about the defense. Jim just talked about the defense. I think that's going to be the selling point over and over and over again. But White Sox fans, again, as we mentioned, this offense right now is awful. Can Billy Carlson one day help the White Sox offense? When Billy Carlson was asked about his swing and the offense, like what was his feedback or I guess reaction to the questions about his swing?
The little bit of defiance that I think you'd expect from a draft player or prospect who knows what's being written about him. Tennessee has their own selves to blame. Apparently they facilitated all the workouts that the White Sox did with them. White Sox sending out Jeff Head, their director of sport performance, to work out with Billy Carlson. They probably could have figured out what his intentions were. So it seems like those Ryan Fuller Instagram stories that were we thought was indicating that they were on actually
Yeah.
Tennessee players was actually just apparently he was there to work out Billy Carlson among some others. So
Really?
that's what they said
At Tennessee?
at
Not in
Tennessee.
California? Wow.
They had fancy facilities there,
Great
but
scoop, James. That's okay.
I mean it's just Zoom stuff. But
Am
Carlson.
trying to hype you up, man. I hyped up your awesome Bobby Jenks story. That's a great piece of information. I thought, yeah, because I thought Ryan Fuller was looking there to watch Tennessee players, but no, Billy Carlson. Okay.
And so Carlson thought he'd gotten to like a lot of his power of recent. He kind of talked about like how'd you know the White Sox were interested? Like it's like, oh, I had a workout with them and I felt like they liked what they saw. And kind of like, what about it? He's like, I hit some dingers. I was bopping the ball. Shirley talked about more seeing him on the showcase circuit initially and feeling like he was clearly new to seeing pro level velocity early, and that he trended up and feeling like he was hitting the ball a lot better late, which kind of showed it was more of an acclimation to seeing and not, physical ability, inability to hit the ball. Like, in talking and texting, Sox people, they talk about the ceiling of the athlete. Like, this is clearly someone who they need to work on the swing, but like, is not someone where they're restraining, the athleticism, what he's going to be able to do. And they feel like he's going to get stronger and that kind of will. You can see video of him. You see how projectable and like lean and rangy he is. Like this is someone who's going to get stronger and like less like baby giraffe with time. And that really what the swing looks like at the end of that process probably says more about his hit tool than, or at least the what they're offering than now. Like there's plenty of Scott skepticism about his hit tool because I think it's at present looks there's a lot of loading action to it that will need to be cleaned up. It's not like slap it in the pro ball right now and it'll be great in full season ball like from jump, but it's kind of the opposite end of the spectrum of like Andrew Vaughn where it's he looks like a major league hitter right now at Cal, so thus we don't have to do a whole lot before him to just be an impact bat. It's this person looks like a major league level athlete, so they will figure out what they need to do. So not to like polished hitters are bad and unpolished hitters are good, but just kind of explaining how it's like the different end of the spectrum in terms of development of he's going to be able to do all these things because he's so toolsy. And yes, we see there's work to do, but we feel like we can do it and that he can physically pull it off.
He is 19, just coming out of high school. He is an older high schooler, so that does get used against Billy Carlson. I did write about that on SoxMachine.com, comparing Eli Willets, who went first overall in the Major League Baseball draft, to Billy Carlson, where Willets is 17 years old, and I'm sure that was a factor for the Nationals taking him first overall, and Carlson's 19, but give him 3 years to develop, and I look forward to seeing how he does improve offensively, because if he can tap into some of his power, the player comp, when I watch him, is I feel like if he went to Tennessee, he would have a successful college career. We'd be talking about Billy Carlson going in the first round, coming out of Tennessee, probably getting comps from Dansby Swanson, who came out of Vanderbilt. So That's my player comp for Carlson, and hopefully he does grow into that because Dansby Swanson is a pretty good shortstop, and the White Sox could use that. Jaden Foskey, so from Nazareth Academy, local kid, he's been working with Jim Thome. We've already been told that we got to look out for Jim Tomey's son in the 2026 MLB draft. But the White Sox area code team strikes again, James. And I know we're going to hear from Jaden tomorrow. I had him number 37 in my top 100. So for the White Sox to get him at the pick 44, I think is a great value for the White Sox. Jim Callis was pretty sold that Foskey wasn't going to be available to the White Sox in the second round. So that ended up happening for the White Sox. But this whole like concept of like trying to capitalize and making sure that they do get the talented local kids in the area, I feel like this is a trend that's going to continue for the White Sox. And I know we're waiting to see if it'll actually produce results. But do we have any additional insight of maybe how like Jim Thome influenced the decision making for the White Sox to go in this direction? Because he did have other talented prep players like Quinn Yun on the board and also proven college bats and Devin Taylor from Indiana.
Yeah, it certainly seems like Thome was a big influence on that. He's obviously been working with this kid for a bit and kind of seen his transition to from catching the outfield and, you know, what he's been doing hitting wise. But, you know, Shirley also brought up Ryan Fuller and the R&D department as being a big part of the Foskey calculus and kind of revealing a little bit of like the principles that they value, which is in zone contact and swing decisions. Cause swing decisions will lead to pitches in the zone if you get to make contact with them. So they feel like there's the grounds for the hit tool. I think a little bit of the question is that he's going to probably like Shirley said, he'll play center field. You know, he's not catching, but I think he's realistically someone you project for a corner and then thus is the power going to develop into that. Maybe they feel it's like a six hit in a degree that lowers the bar a little bit. And you're looking for someone more on the Gal Vargas build who, you know, ideally makes enough good contact to when they do actually get all of it, you wind up with 20 bombs over the wall, but we'll see. It certainly, Thome has been a big part of their draft processes and has been really big on the Nazareth program. So yeah, I've already put in an interview request for Jim Thome. I'm sure we're going to get a lot of like insight about, you know, how he was high on that. And, you know, he's certainly been someone you've regularly been citing even by previous, you know, scouting directors as like, hey, Jim Thome liked him and that being an influence in the draft room. So I think this is a continuation of that, certainly.
Well, I wrote about this during the season, Jim. We caught Thome on the ESPN camera for the Tennessee and Texas A&M game. So, yeah, he has been part of the White Sox draft process.
He's also watching Billy Carlson somehow.
Probably. Maybe he was in Tennessee to watch Billy Carlson. How do you feel about this trend, Jim, that the White Sox continuing to in technology, there is this term called dog fooding, which you consume your own technology. And it's a way of like product testing to make sure it goes out to market that your device works well. It seems like the White Sox with this area code team, because as you wrote about, it's all the way from 2020, right? It's now it could be seven players in their top 30 all come from their White Sox area code team.
Yeah, that's as far back as I looked, just kind of going year to year. But it's Bonomer, then Wolkow, Opper, Schultz, Montgomery, Addison Coffey. You know, those are the other ones I found from 2020. Yeah, the thing is, like, none of them are bad prospects. I mean, Wolkow is a huge project, and everybody knew it. But in terms of, like, he's interesting. Like, Opper has turned a corner this year. Schultz has turned a different corner. He's kind of gotten beaten up a little bit. turned the wrong corner, but at least you know, he had been progressing. Montgomery, you know, we've talked about him, it suffice to say. And like Coffey's had you know, some triple A success. So like he's somebody on the fringe. He's basically like one timing call away from like getting a cup of coffee. So like no real dead ends there, or nobody who's completely flopped. I mean, you look at like last year's picks, like Nick McLain, you know, third rounder, and like draft him when injured, not being able to get on the field. Like if they were drafting area code guys who are like hurts or flawed, and being like, okay, you're kind of too obsessed with this right now to not think clearly. Or, you know, same thing with, you know, Casey Sockey got hurt too, but just, you know, they've had other areas where they've tried to draft guys and like it didn't quite work out, but this is one where it's just like they're getting decent prospects. Not awesome ones yet, although Bonnemer's off to a good start, but they're good enough to where you can't write it off. Like you'd like the White Sox to be more imaginative, but sometimes like imaginative. We saw that with their second round picks with Taylor and Paulette, and it's like they're okay so far, but like they're good relief prospects, but not like hitting the ceiling. So we've seen them try to branch out in different strategies multiple times and building up a body of work, not just doing a one-off test, but like doing it multiple years in a row. And this is one where I think there's been enough results to where, sure, wait for one to fail before completely writing it off. And it's funny though that like you're talking to Jim Callis, listening to that podcast, and just like introducing him to the conversation of like area code guy, and like Jim's like, yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, because you can't, might not be there, but you can't say he won't be there because of the
Right.
connection that the White Sox have with these guys.
I texted Jim after the announcement, and I texted him, the White Sox area code strikes again. And he's like, that was my exact thought
Yeah, he mentioned it
when
on
the
the
grid came
broadcast.
in.
Yeah, I was following the MLB Network one, and he mentioned that. So that was his immediate response.
I think one, I was looking through the quotes, and Getz, Fuller, and Jeff Head were all at the Tennessee workout. So yeah, I think Tony Vitello probably could tell which way the wind was blowing there. Curley went farther to say that Jaden, or what's his name, Foskey, grew up a White Sox fan, and just that like they want to, if there's someone they feel is talented from their area, they want to claim their turf. Like that's something I've heard from them a lot, is like defending their territory and thinking that there's one, if it's just them dedicating so many scouting resources to the area that they feel like they have unique insight, but I don't know if it's like a promotional part or just feeling like this is an ethos they want of like, hey, we're also the team that's going to dominate our local prospects, and like your kid who's a great baseball player who grew up a White Sox fan will wind up playing for the White Sox being some sort of reliable feature. I don't know if there's like they believe there's on-field benefits to it, or they just think it's kind of a cool dynamic to have, but it's something they're saying on the record, and they want us to think that that's guiding them. So take that for what you will.
Feels like that's going to be tougher as attendance drops. You have fewer White Sox fans to pull from. This would be like drafting from small schools, basically. Like, I played shortstop for my high school. There were 150 kids there. We had eight players.
Well, yeah, Foskey was number 37 in my top 100. The third round pick, Georgia Tech shortstop Kyle Lotes, who is the cousin of Alex from Florida State, which Alex was one of the finalists for the Golden Spikes Award, also the Dick Howser Award, the Player of the Year awards in the college level. Kyle had a very successful season at Georgia Tech. He had 16 homers, he had 20 doubles. He transferred from Division II Augusta College. When I was watching Georgia Tech this year, it was more to keep tabs on Drew Burris, who's going to be one of the top prospects for the 2026 MLB draft, and with the White Sox currently having the second worst record, but the best odds of getting the number one pick in the 2026 draft. It was just, let's see how he's doing his sophomore year. Got a chance to watch Kyle Lotes, big fastball guy. He loves hitting the fastball, and that's what generated a lot of his power. He's a bit on the smaller side, 5'11", 180. I'm fully expecting Mike Shirley to say, James, that Kyle Lotes is a gamer. He's scrappy.
You're not far off. Let me just follow
Okay.
up.
Okay.
Describing the first words, a baseball player. So there you go.
Gym rat, coach's son.
The type of skills that from a shortstop, he just knows how to play.
Yeah.
This is
Not a.
not a description of him, but yes, it's very like on brand.
Yeah. So again, the bonus slot for the third round pick is around $1 million. So we'll see if the White Sox save any cash with Kyle Lotes. If you're listening to this podcast episode before 10:30 in the morning, Central Time on Monday, again, the fourth round pick picks up some of the best players available. There's a lot of high schoolers. There's a lot of high schoolers from around the area that I don't know if they're going to sign. You are in that area now, starting the fourth round, that unless you can grab cash from somewhere, serious cash, signability could be an issue for some of the best remaining prep players in my top 100. But on the college side, Mason Neville, outfielder for Oregon. He led the country in home runs, is still on the board. Corbin Dickerson, outfielder from Indiana. Daniel Dickinson, the second baseman from LSU. Gavin Turley, outfielder from Oregon State. Jared Jones, first baseman from LSU. Zane Taylor had the best velocity readings of the MLB draft combine from UNC Wilmington, is still on the board. And a reliever, high leverage type of arm from Tennessee, Nate Snead, all on the board. Those are my best available guys remaining from the top 100 on the college level. We'll see if the White Sox can find any cash to go back to the prep well in the fourth round.
But to your point, having two high school picks up front, you typically are not using high school picks for savings. You are spending to get them out of their college commitments. So with, you know, the third round pick being a college bat, you thought that was kind of them transitioning to maybe saving money. And I kind of asked Shirley, with the two prep picks, is this going to be a college oriented, you know, next few rounds? Cause he did say they were looking for pitching a little bit more going forward. And he immediately countered, like, there are multiple high school players in play for fourth round. So maybe at least one more prep pick is clearly something they're trying to engineer in their top 10 rounds. And then, you know, we can see how creative they get, you know, at the back end of the second day, but just pass it along.
Well, the top three prep players that are left in my top 100 are all in the White Sox backyard or Mike Shirley's backyard. So you got Jack Bauer from Lincoln Way East. He's the kid that threw 103, the lefty. You got Cameron Appenzeller, Tennessee commit from Glenwood. And you got Matthew Fisher from Evansville Memorial down in Indiana. So back to this hole in the backyard, maybe overnight, Mike Shirley could find some cash or be really creative in saving bonus money, find a bunch of seniors he can sign from rounds 5 through 10 and maybe grab one of these three. That would be kind of interesting in the fourth round. But from my perspective, it'd be tough, Jim.
Yeah, he could do the say anything or the show up to their doorstep with the signs, the cardboard signs of just explaining his love for them and try to get him to sign for a little bit below what they're demanding. I regret to inform you, Nate Snead was taken with the last pick of third round. Yeah. Third round supplemental pick, like the only one the Angels took him. So he is no longer on your board.
Darn it. All right. Well, thank you for that update. I missed the supplement round of
The one pick for the supplemental third round. So,
yeah, that's my bad. All right, so Nate Snead, cross him off your list, so you can't have him. And we'll see how rounds 4 through 20 go. Again, we'll be recapping it. And you can join along with the draft chat on SoxMachine.com. But as we wrap up this podcast episode, the White Sox and all of Major League Baseball heading into the All-Star break. And you got Paul Skenes against Tarik Skubal as far as the starting pitchers. For everyone that's heading to Pittsburgh, hoping to see Paul Skenes pitch, we'll see. I mean, if it's used as a bullpen session, maybe he starts either Friday or Saturday against the White Sox. That's where we're going to be for our annual road trip. Can't wait to see everyone. If you had purchased your tickets as far as your packages, definitely check your email. Be sending out as far as updates. Can't wait to see everybody on Saturday and sit all together and also have the pregame party from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. That's Eastern time, of course, being in Pittsburgh at McFadden's. And then we'll hop over to the stadium. And hopefully they still have some Mac Miller bobbleheads because it's Mac Miller bobblehead day on Saturday. And a lot of us will be sitting in section 108 on Friday night. So if you did get Friday night tickets and you want to stop by and say hi and hang out, we'll be in section 108 on Friday night. But with the All-Star break, it's our annual tradition, Jim, our picks to click for the home run derby. But we got James here, so we can't split up teams of four. So we're going to do one. Like, I'll let you pick one. I'll let you start, Jim. You can have the first pick out of the eight on who's your guy to win the home run derby. James, you could be second, and I'll be third. So there you go. You get one guy out of the eight. We're going to leave five on the board. Jim Margulis, who is your pick to win the home run derby?
I've talked about O'Neill Cruz before in terms of just how violent his homers are and how I'm looking Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching him in person. I'm looking forward to watching him in the Home Run Derby. But sometimes the violent ones can, get in ruts or not be pitched right and just doesn't quite work. So the way Cal Raleigh's hitting homers this year and just like how he's just able to do it with such regularity, he strikes me as one of like the boring Home Run Derby winners of just like not killing in the distance leaderboards, doing fine, but just in terms of like just the steadiness with which he's able to deposit like 12 to 15 in a round and put himself in position to endure the ebbs and flows of the competition. I think I'm gonna go with him, even though it feels chalky.
Okay, so Cal Raleigh's Jim's pick. James, who's your pick to click in the Home Run Derby?
I've been texting with Dan Hayes, who's been working on a story about Byron Buxton that he's super excited about, and that'd be cool. Like, as much as like all his best moments have involved, ripping the hearts out of every person who listens to this podcast, I think he's like an objectively like electrifying player, and the fact that he's healthy, I think Sox fans would enjoy, since the Twins are bad anyway. Like, why not celebrate this great player? So that'd be cool. But I want to be more idiosyncratic. You talked about boring winners. Brett Rick Rooker is a very normal man with a normal level of hairline recession at his age. Loves breakfast. Just feels like an everyman that we can pull for amongst all these like 125 mile an hour exit velocity hitting freaks. He feels like with this field a lot, kind of like Paul Bunyan fighting the machine to chop down trees. So I don't know. He just is a very power-oriented player. He's got, he's not a bat speed fiend. So I think those guys like kind of do better in derbies than people have to max effort swing. So, and his swing is geared for loft. And I just think it'd be funny if Brett Rooker won. So
He wants
awesome.
to win it for the fans in location.
He gave me an interview about the A's part when I was there. So, as always, trading favors for journalism. So I root for Brett Rooker and Rick Grimm.
Right. My pick, I'll go with the hometown guy. I'll go with Matt Olson to win it. For the Braves, so that we're leaving Buxton off, Junior Caminero. Caminero, what was that? Cannonero, the Simpsons episode, Jim, the
Yeah.
SUV. Love that
They should
episode.
have
Two
a
Five Tons American Pride.
Caminero verse about how many double plays Junior Caminero hits it. So.
Double play derby.
Jazz Chisholm, O'Neal Cruz, and James Wood. James Wood would be pretty
I'm looking forward to
exciting.
him. Like he could be, like he could win the opposite field home run derby.
Yeah.
Like they should seal off center field in the pole field and just have everybody go for the most impressive opposite field homers. I think he would win going away.
Yeah. It should be a fun one. The O'Neal Cruz, I'm worried he's gonna kill someone though.
Sounds like good television. I have to say I'm disappointed in James Wood. Like, looks
Uh-oh.
like we're gonna pull out the win today, but like we're only 11-5 at the break. Like, we're fighting for our playoff lives. I wish he was focusing on the second half of the season and not these circuses for this audience. Is like, do you want to be part of a playoff team or not? James Wood, I ask you. We got bigger goals than Home Run Derby, but okay, you do you. That's all I'm
Did
saying.
you ask Mark Burley who's on his fantasy baseball team?
I did
Because
not at any
Burley.
point. Maybe I should. I God, he would have just like gone home to Missouri straight off from hearing such an absurd question, probably.
Well, he brought it up.
Yeah,
He brought it
he
up.
mentioned it.
He did?
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody asked him, "Hey, do you keep up with baseball?" And he's like, "Only because of my fantasy team." And I thought of you.
How did I miss this?
It's all right. You'll get another chance at
I
5
have to make
years.
another statue of him.
Ask him again in the 25th reunion of the 2005 squad. Every 5 years, bring them back so James and Mark Burley can rehash and see how each other's fantasy baseball teams are
Yeah,
doing.
does he build championships through the waiver wire like I am dependent upon? Because I keep drafting horrible high school pitchers. I mean, not horrible. I'm sure McCabe's going to figure it out any second now.
1 year, he'll get it figured out. 1 year. But let us know who you like in the Home Run Derby. It's been great interaction on SoxMachine.com in the comment section during the MLB draft. Thank you guys so much for engaging. I hope you enjoyed as far as all the preview draft coverage that we were able to provide all the way from Valentine's Day and then through the MLB draft. We'll see where the White Sox select. It could be a lot of UCLA and Alabama baseball next year when it comes to the college baseball preview and the draft coverage, but I'm glad I got great feedback. So thank you everyone for that feedback. And thank you for reading throughout the year during the MLB draft preview season from Valentine's Day.
So far, you're killing it. You got Fauci was on your radar for a while. You had Carlson strongly, and you're picking the mock draft. So doing well so far.
Yeah. I got two out of the top 10. I haven't seen how the rest of my mock has done, but I'll take 2 out of 10. That's a hell of a lot better than last year. But thank you so much for listening to this podcast episode. We won't have a midweek episode because, again, we'll be making our way to Pittsburgh. So enjoy the Home Run Derby. Enjoy the All-Star break. Wednesday is the slowest sports day of the year. So we all hope that you get a chance to celebrate something, take the night off, go on a date, take a walk, whatever. Enjoy this slow day as things get busy here at Sox Machine until the MLB draft is done, and can't wait to see everybody in Pittsburgh this upcoming weekend. If you just discovered the Sox Machine podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts such as Spotify and Apple Music. You could also listen and watch the show on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine and check out our videos there. You can follow us on social media. We're on all the platforms at Sox Machine. You can follow James at JR Fegan. You can follow me at SoxMachine_Josh. We're on Blue Sky. You can follow us at SoxMachine.com. James is at JRFegan.SoxMachine.com. And I am Josh.SoxMachine.com. If you enjoy our work and want full access to all of our coverage of the Chicago White Sox and Major League Baseball, you can sign up to become a Sox Machine subscriber at SoxMachine.com. Monthly plans start at $5. We also have annual discounts. The $5 a month gets you an ad-free version of both the podcast and website and unlocks the comments section as well. We do have a couple spots open in our Veterans Committee. So with the trade deadline coming up, if you want direct access to James in a group chat, he gave us a little hint as a scout from an opposing team followed him into the White Sox stadium on Sunday. So if that's the type of insight that you would love to get, you can get it. Just go to SoxMachine.com and sign up today to be part of our Veterans Committee.
I followed him. Let's not get the stalker and stalky crossed up.
Okay, sorry. If you want the insight of James stalking scouts at stadiums, sign up at SoxMachine.com. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com. You're on for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside Jim Margulis and James Fegan, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.